30, so I'll declare our meeting open. I'd like to welcome everyone, particularly the members of the public gallery. I'd like to commence our meeting by acknowledging the Gumbangia people, who are the traditional custodians of this land. I pay respect to elders, both past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal people present this evening. And could I also remind everybody that this meeting is actually being webcast, so those in attendance should refrain from making any defamatory comments. And if you have a mobile phone with you, could I ask that you switch it to silent, please? Thank you. And actually, councillors, before we start, I would also like to note on the minutes and record Council's observation of the passing of one of our most wonderful local residents. Most of us knew her as Sugar, Raylene Ballengarry. Raylene was a wonderful, colourful person. She was chair of Gargawongan Board, did an enormous amount of work, not only in our local Indigenous community, but in the broader community. And, yeah, she'll be very sorely missed. And she always did our Welcome to Country on Australia Day. And I wrote to her daughter and made the comment that her Welcome to Country was one of the best that I've ever heard anywhere I've ever been, because it was very specific to the Nambucca Valley. So, yes, she will be very sadly missed, and we offer our condolences to her immediate family. Councillor Trevor is not here tonight, and, of course, Raylene was his sister, but also to the extended family and those in the Gumbangia community who I know will miss Raylene. Okay. And we'll now go to apologies.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. As you've just said, Councillor Trevor Ballengarry is actually on leave, takes some personal leave at the moment, so he's an apology this evening.
Thank you. And do we have Pastor Dutlow here? Okay, well, looks like we'll have to wing it without a prayer. Disclosures of interest.
No, Madam Chair, there are no disclosures of interest at this point.
Confirmation of the minutes, councillors, from the ordinary meeting of the 27th of October. Yep. Moved Councillor Wilson, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Are there any corrections to the minutes? None. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Now go straight to the notices of motion. First is on page 17, item 5.1, which is one of mine. I'll formally move that. Seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 18, item 5.2. Again, this is my notice of motion, and I have a little more information. If I'll formally move it, if I can get a seconder. Seconded Councillor Vance. Thank you. Since I did this notice of motion, councillors, and one of the staff did actually ask me about, because their claim was that it was eco-friendly, and by chance they've actually emailed and sent through data material safety, the chemical and... a bit more information, and I should give that to the engineering department. This is the magic mix. As you'll have read from the notice of motion, when we're at the local government conference, there are lots of different firms that are trying to sell their products to local councils, but there was a firm... material, the New South Wales State Government, the Minister for Roads actually made mention, he didn't obviously advertise the company name, but made mention of the product because I understand the RMS are also looking at it. It's a product that our residents might be pleased to hear, supposedly can be used in wet potholes and that the patch will actually stick. So... they did indicate that they were interested in doing a trial somewhere, Hence my notice of motion that we tell them that we've got plenty of potholed roads, that they're welcome to come and do a free trial so we can have a look at it. And obviously, if it's successful, you know, we'd be happy to tell our neighbouring councils how good it is. But if it doesn't work, we haven't spent unnecessary money. So I think it'd be good if they could come and do a trial. And that's the purpose of the motion. And that apparently is the magic product. So I'll leave that with Mr. Walsh to have our staff trial. Is cold mix instructions. I was tempted to try it on my own driveway, but I thought I'd better hand it in. So if there's no further discussion, those in favour? Against, it's carried. Councillors, we have a late notice of motion, and I'm going to ask for a motion that the late notice of motion be considered. Moved Councillor Martin Ballengarry, seconded Councillor Vance. Just by way of explanation, I've checked through the Code of Meeting Practice, and I think I'll send everyone an email. There's about four sections of the code that apply, and where a notice of motion has come in and it's within the 3 days, technically, under the code, it actually requires a resolution of council to consider it, and it also requires the chair to determine it as a matter of urgency, that it can't wait till the next meeting. Obviously, because of the dates involved, Councillor Buchanan needs an answer on this for his leave. Therefore, it can't wait till the next meeting. But anyway, I'll send that information out so that you know in future that if you've got a late notice of motion, that you can submit it under certain circumstances and what those circumstances are. Okay, so those in favour of the late motion, against, it's carried. So now, Councillor Buchanan, are you formally moving your motion? Thank you. We have a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Genvey. Those in favour, against, it's carried. And congratulations on being selected to attend this quite a prestigious event. Okay. Now go to public forums and delegations, and our first delegation is Mr. Kevin Franey from Thomas Noble and Russell, and as you're aware, they're the external auditors. And if you go to page 42, item 10.4, the 2021-22 annual financial statements, and Mr. Franey is going to give us a bit of a plainish overview, I believe. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, councillors, for having me along here today. My name is Kevin Franey. I'm one of the partners at TNR, and we're contract auditors to the New South Wales Audit Office, who are ultimately the auditors of council, of all councils in New South Wales. So today I'd just like to walk you through the council's audit process and outcomes, and provide you with an understanding, and open it to the floor to make sure that everyone has a clear understanding of how we're travelling and where we sit as far as our financial performance and position goes. Before I do, I'll just give you a brief introduction as to what the Audit Office is doing in the background. Obviously, their focus continues to be on integrity, also on focusing on natural disasters, and also cyber security. There's lots of things going on in each of those areas, as we're all aware. We've all been impacted by them in some shape or form. So that's what's on their agenda at this point in time. They have a team in Sydney who specialise in doing performance audits, etc., which will hopefully identify areas of improvement that we can adopt moving forward. The planned audit program for the Audit Office for the 2022 to 2025 financial year, and excuse me for looking to the screen, you can see there that the local government audit is high on the agenda. Obviously, that's a big part of their work. Over 140 councils in New South Wales, and the Auditor General provides a report to the New South Wales State Parliament each year. That's generally issued around April next year, relating to the 2022 financial year. And you can see there that there's a range of other matters which I've touched on: cyber security, effectiveness of management and governance in selected councils, and then moving forward a whole range of matters, including asset management, roads asset maintenance, financial management and governance, and performance management and monitoring. In relation to the local government report for 2021-22, which will go to the State Parliament next year, on the screen are the focus areas of the Auditor-General. And as part of my role in Auditing Council, we've taken a view of most of those matters on there, and any findings arising from Nambucca Shire Council's report will get fed into that particular report. So every council is included in that report if they've finalised their financial statements. And, yeah, it's a matter of helping to improve the local government sector. So, Madam Mayor, moving on to the financial statements. Council has completed the preparation of their financial statements and the financial audit has been conducted. The management general manager and his team have done a great job in assisting the audit team to undertake that process. It begins back in around February, March each year with the planning process, and the testing of the systems, Council's financial reporting systems, takes place prior to June. And then post-June, the audit focuses on the balance sheet and financial reporting disclosures. You can see there for the 2022 financial year, there's a number of matters that I've got on the screen there. One is major movements in the profit and loss statement. As you'd anticipate, rates and annual charges, a very small increase there. Council is rate pegged. 2% was the increase in the 2022 financial year, which really doesn't keep pace with inflation, but that's the way it goes. You'll see there the number there is increased slightly more than that due to growth within the Shire. The biggest matter item impacting the financial performance of councils is the amount of grants and contributions that we received during the year. And as you can see there, this council is no different to a lot of other councils in this area. There's a lot of grants coming our way, arising from economic stimulus and also natural disaster recovery processes. So no surprise to see that increase substantially from $20 to $30 million. As a result, your operating result before capital grant, after capital grants and contributions, has increased by around about $7 million. The number that we like to focus on, though, however, is the result before capital grants and contributions, because obviously we can't continue to rely on capital grants and contributions. We need to generate our own income to enable us to maintain our assets. And as you can see there on the screen, the consolidated result is around about a loss of $1 million compared to a loss of $2 million last year. So improving result. If I focus on what makes up that consolidated result, it's made up of general fund, water fund, sewer fund and domestic waste management. And the general fund returned a small surplus this year, which is an excellent result. It is influenced by the fact that we receive financial assistance grants in advance. So when you take that out of there, there is a small loss. But it's not too far off the mark, which is a pleasing result. If general fund can break even or return a surplus, preferably return a surplus, that enables us to reinvest into our assets and maintain them at the appropriate levels. So congratulations there. Water and sewer looks like we've got a little bit of work to do. They're in deficit, and I'm sure your management team is working hard on that aspect of council's operations. Cash and cash equivalents. You can see there that council's got around about $64.5 million in the bank. Now, most people might say, well, we've got heaps of money, but a lot of that is restricted for special use and not available for day-to-day usage. So the externally restricted assets there, unspent grants, developer contributions, what else have we got, water and sewer funds, all those sorts of things there outside of general fund are externally restricted and available specifically for that use. So you can see there that's gone up slightly from 42 to 49, largely impacted by the grants and contributions that we received that are unspent at balance date. And our internal reserves, which are those reserves which are set aside by resolution of council, they've increased from 9 to 11, but that's really only increased because management has put aside unspent financial assistance grants received in advance, and there's also some unexpended loans. So they're just really timing differences at the end of the day. But nevertheless, we've still got $9 million sitting there for special projects by council resolution. A couple of performance ratios that we focus on. These are largely operating ratios. A lot of them are short-term liquidity ratios as well. There are other ratios that council prepares in relation to asset maintenance and asset replacement, etc. However, they're unaudited at this point in time, and the management team will obviously brief council on how we're travelling in that respect. Operating performance, that's basically a measure of how profitable we are after we take out capital grants and contributions. So if we're positive in that space, that means we've generated just enough income across the whole council to, as a percentage of our revenue, excluding capital grants and contributions. So just broken into the black there this year, which is a good result. Obviously, the focus is general fund, water and sewer as well, but general fund is rate pegged. So if general fund can continue to focus on getting that in a positive space, that's a good result as well. But nevertheless, a good result on a consolidated basis. Own-sourced operating ratio, revenue ratio. This measures how sustainable we are to generate our own income and not rely on grants. So you can see there that we've got a little way to go. We've almost got there over the last 3 years. This year looks a lot worse because of the fact that we have received a lot more grants in the current year, which has diluted that. Where's that going? That's good. All right. So I guess Mr. Sykes would be able to tell you what that ratio might be without the capital, with all the grants coming through there, but it would be a lot higher and probably closer to the 60%, I'd imagine. Unrestricted current ratio. This is a ratio that measures our liquidity, how we can pay our debts as and when they fall due. So basically, current assets divided by current liabilities, but excluding all of our externally restricted cash and investments. So as you can see there, from a liquidity perspective on a consolidated basis, we're well and truly meeting the Office of Local Government's performance measures. So that's a good result. Debt service cover ratio, do we have enough money set aside or generating enough money to pay our debts, our loan debts as when they fall due? And that shows that we're well and truly in the positive area there, which again is a good result. And this is a very good result as well. Rates and annual charges outstanding. This shows how effective we are at collecting our rates and annual charges. anything below 5% is a really good result, and it shows that we're being efficient collecting our rates and annual charges, but also taking into consideration the each individual circumstances. And the cash expense cover ratio, that's a ratio that measures how much cash we've got aside if we weren't able to operate for a period of time. So essentially there we've got around about 18 months worth of cash sitting there if everything were to stop, which hopefully that doesn't. So, Madam Mayor, I guess when you look at those ratios, good result. But I guess the focus is to get each of those funds in a positive operating result situation and continue to focus on the long-term picture as well, which is asset renewals and funding your depreciation expense. In relation to asset renewals, the depreciation expense, how quickly we depreciate our assets is how quickly we should be spending money to meet that depreciation expense. So in the current year, asset renewals were $10.3 million compared to $5.7 million in the prior year. Big jump, but that's because we've got a lot of grants coming through and that's reflected in that particular outcome. Our depreciation expense, obviously, I'm not exactly sure where that got to, Matt, but it must be almost break-even in relation to our asset renewals ratio. And then in relation to new assets, $10 million worth of new assets were acquired compared to $9 million in the previous year. So lots of money going into the asset pool, and which means we've got to maintain them down the track. Madam Mayor, that's a short overview of Council's operations. I hope that's provided you and the Councils with a brief understanding of where we're at. What that paints to me as Auditor is that you're in a sound short-term financial position. And like all local government authorities in New South Wales, asset management and maintenance is the big game, and continue to work on that one. happy to take any questions.
Councillors, anyone have any questions?
With all the...
Councillor Janvey.
Sorry, yes. With all the grant funding we've got that has produced more assets, are we obviously heading for a bigger amount of money in the future that's got to be put away for depreciation?
Yes, through you, Madam Mayor, that's correct. As we spend more assets, on more assets, new assets that is, that will increase your depreciation expense. So when you are making decisions as councillors, you need to be sure that that asset is going to generate enough income to enable you to fund that depreciation where possible.
It's not, I mean, it's not visible where that income's coming from in the report.
No, no. So I guess when I say that, you know, when you're looking at when you're looking at big projects like, let's say, you know, there's certain projects that you know may or may not generate sufficient revenue, but it's ideal if you can get them to generate revenue that will enable them to be sustainable in their own right.
Any other questions, councillors? I did have a couple, and I'm not sure whether I should direct these to you, Mr. Frayne, or to our Chief Financial Officer, but the debt service ratios. Now, my understanding is that is looking at pretty much what percentage of our income is committed to servicing a debt before we do anything else. I also recall some years ago reading, you know, I think it was an Office of Local Government article that there's a fine line between being overly conservative about borrowing and putting yourself too far into debt. Are our current, in other words, that it's particularly if interest rates are low, to not be borrowing and replacing or repairing assets on borrowed money, and trying to wait, it's a bit like saving a house and taking on a mortgage. You know, the longer you leave it, the more expensive the house becomes, the harder it is to save the deposit. So are we sort of in the right space with our debt service ratio, or are we being perhaps a little too conservative, or in your view, a little beyond, you know, where we're pushing the boundaries of our capacity to repay debts?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Madam Mayor, and it's one that I get asked regularly. Look, at the end of the day, it comes down to your ability to afford repayment of debt, and it also comes down to your long-term financial planning. So what are our asset needs, and you know, where are the demands? And you've only got a finite pool, and then you break it down by general water and sewer fund, and you've got to look at it on that basis as well. So I can't give you a definitive answer on that. Your management team will probably offer you some greater advice than that, but it should be driven by your asset management plans.
Okay. Those asset management plans should in turn, particularly in water and sewer, be informing fees and charges.
Absolutely.
And developer contributions.
Absolutely. That's the reason why we have a long-term management plan in general water and sewer fund to enable us to look forward and say, well, what do I need to spend in the next 20 to 30 years and how much revenue do I need to generate to replace those assets or actually build new assets and not let one generation bear the burden.
So, in other words, and that long-term strategy, we, as councillors, I think you're referring to our integrated water cycle management strategy.
Yes.
And the financial plans, and that, as I understand it, we are about to review.
Yes, that's right.
Or in the process of engaging consultants to review to make sure that all of those fees, charges and contributions are actually going to ensure that we have the capacity in
that's
the future
correct.
To renew assets when it's needed.
That's correct, yeah. Council should continue to review its fees and charges to make sure they're commensurate, you know, with the recovery of those asset commitments coming forward, together with loans and grants. There's a whole mix of things, exactly.
Yeah. we have some people in the public gallery that I think have an interest in future planning for sewer assets.
Yes.
And yeah, I was just wondering whether that's why I was asking about our capacity to repay loans, because is it something that, in order to prevent sewer spills and some of the issues that come with ageing infrastructure, what was our position like in terms of should we be borrowing and pulling things forward, as well as updating our IWCM and making sure our charges and fees are appropriate? But is it something... I was just trying to get a feel for how far...
It's a whole range of those. You'll fund your assets from debt, revenue, developer contributions. It's a whole big melting pot, and your finance team will advise you on that one for sure.
Okay, thank you. Well, I think the report that our staff have done has answered some of the other questions that I had after I'd read the financial statements. I must admit that there were a few things that I struggled with. The other issue is we're currently, for this financial year, pegged at 0.7%. I know this is crystal ball stuff, but I think we've all read what the current inflation figures are, and I know that I think the report tells us that the council's fuel costs, for example, have increased by, 63%? And I know, you know, people forget that council pays for things like street lighting and so forth, and I'm thinking our electricity accounts have absolutely skyrocketed, although an investment in the last few years in solar has certainly helped. But where's that rate peg, given that I know that our costs are way beyond, or increasing way beyond that 0.7%, what impact is that 0.7% rate peg likely to have overall on council's financial situation?
Look, it's a question for your management team, that one. Obviously, it's quite a low increase in your revenue base. So, like everyone, we've got to live within our means, but with all the increases that we've got there, it certainly raises the issue of, you know, how do we manage our operations without such a small increase. A lot of councils are looking at special rate variations. So that's our last resort, obviously, because everyone out there is struggling, but that's something that council needs to consider.
Okay, thank you. No one else has thought of anything they'd like to ask?
Just got one, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Angel.
A quick look at the income statement here and just the difference between actual and unaudited budget. Does the differences there, you're looking at operating results, the unaudited budget is 13.8 and the actual is 18.3. Does that cause you any concern as how much of a difference that is as far as looking from the outside in, or is it just par for the course? Is it a resourcing for data going in, coming out? Or?
Yeah, well, it's a good question through you, Madam Mayor. We actually don't audit that part of the financial statements, but that budget is your original budget. So during the year, there's lots of things that change. Yeah. So you've got a flexible budget and your management team update on a quarterly basis. So your original budget projections, in most cases, they'll be pretty accurate, but you can't predict how much you're going to get in grants. You can't predict how much you're going to get in developer contributions. There's a range of things coming into there that will obviously change over the year and won't match. Yeah, that's right.
No other questions? Thank you, Mr. Franey.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, councillors.
Councillors will deal with this item now, seeing as you should all be on page 42. Where is it, sorry? Did I give you the right page numbers? Page 40. Nope. It's page...
No, 42 is right.
Oh, it was page 42. Well, I'll move the recommendation as is, and I'd like to add a second point that Council thank Mr. Franey for his presentation. And I'll add a third point. finance staff be congratulated on completing the 2021-22 annual financial statements? Within the statutory time frame, under very trying circumstances. Can get a seconder? Seconded Councillor Wilson. Thank you. I've added that third point because I know it's their role to do this, but I think councillors are all very aware of how difficult the last few years, but particularly the last 12 months in terms of managing financial situations and the volatility, the additional grant funding that turns up, the carry forwards, all of the issues that they've had to deal with, including staffing levels. Put it this way, there's a lot of larger councils, as I understand it, or I have seen in the past, I don't know about this year, there's a lot of much larger councils with far more staff resources than we have that fail to meet the statutory deadlines for having this reporting done. So if there's no other discussion, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Now go to page 56 of the business paper, item 12.2. Councillors, we have a delegation. Oh, sorry, I've skipped one. We have a public forum before the next delegation. My apologies. We have Mr. Darrell Hughes, who would like to address Council as a public forum. Mr. Hughes would like to speak regarding waste transfer fees and the causeway to Stewart Island. So is Mr. Hughes would like to come forward?
Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Hughes.
That's okay, Lady Mayor. Thank you, Lady Mayor and General Manager and the councillors for having me here. It's just very briefly, I'd like to mainly bring up the business about the causeway. The causeway itself now is causing so much sand siltation that it won't be long that you'll be able to walk right across the river. I know council hasn't got it on their books for quite some time to address the river properly, but something has to be done now about the causeway. Naturally, the best thing to do would be to put another bridge in on the ocean side of the causeway with sticks underneath so the whole river could flow under. That's a lot of money, I realise that. But a second best thing that wouldn't be a lot of money there's an 1800 diameter pipe letting all that water trying to get out. All that water is hitting the pipe, stationary, drops of sand, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. One item that was brought up is put another three pipes in. Now, that is not a big job to get machinery in there and dig that out and put it so that there's four 1800 pipes that will get rid of the water and it'll take all that sand with it. And that's one of the reasons, too, because of that build-up there, that we've had the last flooding of the golf course. We've had plenty of water heights that high before that haven't flooded the golf course. This one did badly. Today, people tried to get across the golf. You had to nominate your golf time because the high tide was over the causeway. We had to stay there a couple of hours just to get back across the causeway without driving through salt water. It's not a thing that can be put under the carpet. We have to start to act on this now. It's affecting tourism. The boats aren't coming here anymore. They can't navigate the river. Our local fishermen can't navigate the river. We all know that the water's polluted, but that's the thing. That's a separate issue altogether. My main concern is the siltation. And if we wait, like somebody has proposed, till 2029, I'll be able to walk across the river from the golf club to the bank on the other side. That's how bad it's getting. You can almost do it now. Something has to be done, Lady Mayor, and it has to be done soon. And I was going to try and talk about tip fees. I don't know if I've got enough time.
You've got another minute and a half.
Okay.
If you can.
I'd like to just say my little bit about tip fees. If I wanted to cut a tree down in my yard and it's got a trunk of about 9 inches, 10 inches diameter, that could weigh up to a tonne. Now, you get that into a box trailer and you go to the tip, $205. I mean, and when the tip gets hold of that tree, then they mulch it up and sell it. I mean, come on. I mean, we pay our rates. In my opinion, those type of things going to the tip should be free. It's a lot of money to come out of a person's pocket, and we wonder why people dump on the side of the road. Well, that's one of the reasons. The tip fees are far too high. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before you leave the rostrum, sir, I just want to check whether any councillors have any questions for you. Councillor Jones.
Manager of Development and Environment. I thought green waste was free at the tip. Am I missing something? Or?
No, it's not.
We've got to pay for green waste.
Are you in a position to?
Yes.
Through the General Manager, Councillor Jones, no, it's not free. I couldn't say what the exact cost was. But
it's $205 a tonne for green waste.
Sorry. Good point.
Any other questions? No? Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
Lady Mayor. Okay. Oh, I've just been advised by senior staff that, what is it,
$82 a tonne.
Oh, yes. The actual charge... $84 a tonne of that is the New South Wales government's waste levy that they bought in some years ago. It started off, I think, at about $26 a tonne. They've now jacked it up to $84 a tonne. It's even dearer in metropolitan areas. And I've been in trouble for saying this in the past, but I'm more than happy to keep on saying it. It's essentially just a tax. There's no service provided for it. You don't get anything for it. So what it means is that the council has to pay to the New South Wales state government $84 per tonne for everything that now enters our landfill. So we have to pay that bill to them before we have to pay for the monitoring of the existing landfill and so forth. It is very much a user-pay system. It doesn't run at a profit. And anyone who's interested, if you look at... all of the documentation that was part of the Coffs Coast waste court case, the actual costs of running a landfill are astronomical, and it's because of all of the legislative requirements around everything from environmental protection, and there's good reason for some of those things, and I'm not criticising all of them, but I think some of them are a little over the top. I mean, we've got an old cell that's been capped for many, many years, but we have to continually pay consultants thousands of dollars to monitor it. There's no allowance for if you've had good monitoring for a period of time that you can report less often. You've still got to, and that's in perpetuity. So the more cells you create and fill, the more monitoring you have. I think the cost of the next hole in the ground, which is the next cell for putting landfill, the actual cost of that, the last quote that I looked at, and this is from outside, it's not council staff doing something and doing it in a way that's exorbitant and costing more than it should, and from memory, the next cell was a minimum of $4.5 million. Around $4.5
million. To construct.
Yeah.
30.
Sorry, it's now 6:30. I think 4.5 was what was in our original budget, and my recollection now that you've mentioned that was what the tenders, that's what the tenders came at back in. So they're the sort of costs, but we have to have a landfill, and we can't say to people, don't worry about taking it to landfill and just tip it on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. But someone has to pay. You as ratepayers, our residents, have to pay that $6.3 million to create those cells. Yeah, and it is astronomical, but you know they have to be lined with geotechnical fabric and good. And again, as I said, I'm not criticising that. I understand there are reasons for protecting the environment from some of the things that can be very dangerous to the environment from landfill. And it's why this council does its very best to encourage. It's why we went to the yellow and green bin system and why we encourage recycling for that very reason, because every tonne we can keep out of landfill means that we're not having to create new cells as often and at that kind of cost. And it also means that we're not paying state government $84 a tonne for getting nothing back from them for that. And the disappointing thing is that that $84 a tonne is not returned to communities to assist. Well, they'll tell you that some of it is available back to councils in the form of grant funding, but in my view, the whole lot of it, of all of that money that's paid to the state government in, as that waste levy, should be made available to communities or to organisations to do research into recycling, avoiding landfill, reuse and so forth. But it's not a significant... More than half of it goes into state general revenue and isn't returned for environmental or encouragement of recycling and avoiding landfill and avoiding waste in the first place. So, councillors, as it was a public forum, as you're aware, we can't actually move a formal motion from that. So the only option is a report if anyone sees fit, but I think that... would it be appropriate to ask the staff to comment on the vision of the opening up of the river? Because council did quite a few years ago now, and I was involved with it at the time. Long-term residents will know that causeway completely across to Stewart Island completely blocked the river. Anyone who's studied all of the old records of the river will know that that actual section upstream, back in the late 1880s, was one of the deepest parts of the Nambucca River. I think it was something like 80 fathoms it's marked on the maps. So you know, the causeway, I believe, was constructed probably 80 or 90 years ago, and it was filled in so that a fellow could get cattle across to Stewart's Island, and then it eventually got built up and eroded, and of course it blocked the river. When the council put that existing culvert in, there was significant community backlash about putting the culvert in. The local Goombangia community were passionate about having the culvert because there were cultural reasons as well as for the health of the river that they wanted to see the water flow again. But there was a huge community backlash. There were front page of the paper of how children were going to be sucked through the culverts and drown, how the current was going to increase and destroy Bellwood Park and make it unsafe for swimming. The other issue we had last time was it was a nightmare getting all of the consents from, because the council doesn't have the authority to do stuff in the river. And I'll, if I may, through the general manager, ask Mr. Walsh, it would require fisheries permits, Crown lands, licences.
Through the General Manager. Madam Mayor, yes, both those departments, as well as Department of Planning and Environment, their water division.
Okay. So there'd be a significant amount of initial consultation as well as community consultation before we could consider that. And I think also the gentleman suggested that the costs of some extra pipes, the pipes themselves may not be that expensive, but the costs of trying to work under tidal conditions and providing an alternate access to the island and to the golf course while it was being constructed, I think it would actually be potentially quite an expensive exercise. I'm not saying that it can't be done and that it shouldn't be considered, but I'm just flagging that it's not as simple as digging a hole and dropping a couple of pipes. So there would be considerable expense. But we have done it once, and I do know I've had approaches from some of our local Aboriginal elders who've indicated that it's their passion that they would like to see more of. They don't object to the road across to the golf course, but they would also like to see additional large box culverts placed in the river. I think that's as much information as we're able to provide, but I'm sure, sir, if you wanted further information in terms of what's planned for the future, that if you contacted our staff during office hours, that because there's documentation and records on it, and I'm sure that they'd be happy to share it with you. Okay, thank you. The councillors, we will now go to page 56, item 12.2, and we do have a delegation from Mr. James Ford. Mr. Ford is here.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, General Manager, Council staff and councillors. Thank you for the chance to readdress my concerns tonight about our local sewage issues, which seem to be starting to affect more than just the oyster industry. As a growing number of spills for this year seem to be starting to hit a public nerve, not just the financial pocket of the oyster industry and follow-on businesses. Swimmers, tourists and school water sports in the area are being affected. Now that council has been partaking in the signage program, which is part of their licence requirement. But it makes one question why an oyster farmer has to be the one to ask every time for this action to be implemented and not done straight from the back of council. To clear up the muddy waters around the East Street issue of timing of reports, sewage spill, yes, council reported an issue with a cracked pipe to the EPA. No, they had not reported an actual sewage spill. If council had done a simple water test to confirm yes or no for the leakage, oyster farmers would not have wasted money testing. And for some farmers, 2 days' worth of work harvesting, only to have to return the product back to the water after tests failed. As an industry, we understand there will be future spills and always the odd hiccup. In reality, a couple of years, yes, but 180 days plus this year alone, and the year's not finished yet. And it's very confusing to understand the truth in the reports that it is all due to rainfall, these extra spills, and poor old infrastructure, stormwater inundation. When the last rainfall event we had was 125 mil in the Maxwell area from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. on that day, yet no spills were reported to enter the Nambucca River. There were other spills in an area of which seems a bit of a concern, as far as it was the pumping station in the industrial area, which one would think to be reasonably new infrastructure, which could be a scary thought that if new infrastructure is already failing. Back to the point about the amount of rainfall. Other rainfall events have happened around the 60 mil mark for the same time frame and have seen pumping stations overload in the past and spills enter the Nambucca River. So rain events don't seem to be matching up with the reports. Or maybe council managed this event very well and flicked the correct pumps at the correct times. If so, well done. But if so, that only screams of other events were not managed correctly. Industry wants a future for us. The health of the river, for general public. We have ideas which we'd like to put before council to investigate into if these could be possibly implemented for longer term solutions. One, along the lines of a stormwater sewage connection certificate that goes along the similar lines of which relate to swimming pools for sale of house. This may need to be brought into at a state level of government to stop the illegal connections. Two, If council were to acquire a large area of land around near Gumma Wetlands, close to the current STP system, that council would push to remove the STP from the river totally and run through the wetlands. This would be a perfect scenario for many reasons, in stopping acid sulphate and also storm surging throughout the wetlands would not close the river to harvest for 21 days. As in the report and study that has been done, it would take months for that water to enter the actual river. There has been a study done on this somewhere. I'm not sure of actually where it is, but could chase up. And would go a long way to the oyster farmers getting direct harvest. These are long-term solutions, but we need action at ground level now to survive and save the Nambucca River for public health. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Councillors, any questions for Mr. Ford?
Yeah, but I've got a question. Obviously, aquaculture is your field.
Yep.
And we're talking, I mean, you mentioned a lot of stuff that's sort of long-term for your industry in that, preventative moves. Is there something short-term of booms or water booms or anything when anything like this happens that you've looked at? Or
I've thought about what they actually have in the dairy industry overseas. They have storage bladders.
Yep.
And they actually, when they get large rain events, the storage bladders are used to hold their effluent waste from their washdowns and things and everything, and aren't put out onto the paddocks while their paddocks are still pogged up. And in dry terms, they use that stored water in the bladder and then put it back through. I thought, I'm not sure of what sort of area is around the pumping stations and what sort of capacity bladders could be beside a pumping station or the actual implementation of piping a bladder into for these storm surges.
What about around your actual oysters? Is there anything you can get around it? Like, I'm thinking booms, if they can work, or anything you can invest in at all that might save them, or...
No. About the only thing is that may help is a wet storage system, which allows us to hold oysters in a tank for a longer term. Some of the guys are getting up to 8-9 weeks, so that we actually, if we hit these, good times to actually harvest, we could fill a larger tank and hold a larger quantity of oysters for a period of 8 to 10 weeks in these wet storage systems, but they are hugely expensive to set up.
Yeah. I mean, I've looked at the options by water and sewage ahead of that, and listening to yourself, it's obviously lots of stuff there in the future by many years, but, you know, you've lost half your year product, you know, so far.
Well, it's actually been 12 months since I've sold an oyster because due to floods and things and everything, and I understand it's wet years and stuff, but with Mum and Dad were fighting this from 12, 15 years ago.
Thank you. Councillor Janvey.
Yeah, just correct me, Mr. Ford. You seem a bit sceptical. I mean, we know the problem is a lot of with the stormwater.
Well, that's what we're being told, yes.
That's what you're being told. So the stormwater sewer connection, this certificate, you sort of thought might be a good idea. So do you think a lot of the problem is those connections rather than rainfall events and too much stormwater entering the system? Like, do you think it's our infrastructure, our connections, rather than stormwater, our system around the stormwater?
Well, initially, going back 2-3 years ago when we sat down at the table here with sewage specialists, DPI, Food Safe, and all the rest of it, we had the meeting. And virtually from council's point of view, it was illegal connections, low-lying manholes that seemed to be the issues. Council did put somebody on to do smoke testing, even though at that meeting they were told smoke testing will not get you the results you want because a simple SN stops the smoke. And I don't know why they went down the track of doing the smoke testing. And to there's been lots of talks about colour coding pipes and things and everything. Plumbers aren't going to care what colour the pipe is. They're going to, if their house is below street level, they've got to run their stormwater somewhere. So the easiest option to get it to disappear is down the sewer. So if there was, my train of thought, if there was a certificate that went along with, you know, when you do your search fees and things, and I'm not sure what levels of state government or whether council can implement it in their own area, even if there was a charge to comply with that certificate, but you had to have that certificate to get your house sold, people would be less inclined to actually hook into a system knowing they can't sell their house down the track.
So, I mean, just to clarify for me, so I'm a bit slow today, but like council went down this path with public works and the smoke testing and our looking at our own infrastructure for stormwater infiltration. Do you believe that's the biggest part of our problem, or we should just be directing stormwater?
Can I just step in there and correct that, because I was at that meeting and it was actually that expert, and I think he was from Public Works, who, because...
DPE Water.
Yeah, DPIE Water, because the council's general manager and I were in attendance, and similar to what Mr Ford has suggested, what the general manager and I were putting to them was something immediate and actually holding that contaminated water, that storm surge water, because part of the problem is there's just so much water in a flood event that the sewage treatment plant is overwhelmed. It's too much water. You shouldn't have storm water going through your sewage treatment plant. So, but one of the, what we thought, and I think Mr Ford is suggesting something similar, is dealing with that storm surge. We know we have a problem with that storm surge water. There's several other possibilities in terms of reasons, and it's probably a combination contributing to that, but the immediate problem is that water. And I can recall the general manager getting quite frustrated at the time, because he was suggesting, and I'm not sure about how we'd go getting it into a wetland and whether we'd have environmental issues with that if it was potentially sewage water or whatever, but we at the time were thinking of, if we can get clean stormwater channeled through the wetland, or if all else fails and they want us to completely hold it, basically build a big turkey's nest dam, and then when the rain event's over, bit by bit pump it through, still put it through all of the treatment, but get clean water into the river and hold it, let it settle out, and treat the water, knowing that when it eventually ends up in the river, it's... And at the time, we were criticised for suggesting that, and it was that expert fellow that sort of said that, oh, it'll be coming off roofs and illegal connections. And I take Mr Ford's point about smoke, because, yeah, the smoke, it's a bit like the S-bend in the toilet. Smoke's not going to go through the water, whereas a dye will. But the work that the council staff have done to date showed minimal issues with that. But we were told that that's where we should be putting our focus. And I think Mr Ford will confirm that, because he was at the meeting as well. They more or less told us that the turkey's nest, or I think they told us that was a back, that was a, their attitude was that that was treating the symptom. You know, we need to treat the cause. The issue, though, was trying to identify the cause. And our own staff said that they believed that quite a bit of it was, again, as Mr Ford has suggested, where we have old pipes or pipes where the joins have gone, that there's water ingress during the wet weather, you know, when the ground's saturated. So, and that's why I say I suspect that it's a combination of illegal connections, damaged or broken pipes that are hard to detect when they're underground. And that's one of the reasons that we've put money into the relining process that you'll have seen in the budget. But we've also done the smoke testing, and I'm very pleased to see in Mr. Spain's report that we're going to the dye testing. We've started it this week. I've just been advised. The only issue I have with, I take your point about your suggestion about the certificate, but problem is that the minute someone's got the certificate, they could then put in the illegal connection. You know what I mean? You get the certificate first, you get an inspection, get your certificate. After you've got your certificate showing that it's got a legal connection, you then dig the ground up, put that little trap in and connect it.
But it'd be re-inspected every time you sold your house.
Okay, so what you're so a bit like a 145 certificate that you have to have on sale of the house.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's just for the initial start of building a house. If somebody knows they've got that problem down the track to sell their house,
they're not going
to.
Yeah.
They're going to be less inclined to just go. Yeah. No. Done.
Yeah. Well, I do know staff members have told me that they have had plumbers advise them that they have been asked to. And have refused, but they have been asked to install those things. So, yeah, I do suspect that there's still quite a few illegal connections, and hopefully the dye testing will pick them up.
I was just trying to ascertain from Mr. Ford whether he thought it was our infrastructure and these connections, or whether you think we bigger problem is removing the stormwater or storing it in a bladder or in a turkey nest or
Well, to me, the quick fix is a storm bladder to actually take the surge out of the lines. Or, like we had the thought of previously, the big turkey dam, maybe there could be several large bladders within that area. I'm not an engineer.
No,
it's
no.
Just thoughts that I've had.
I was just interested in
frustrations
your opinion.
I've been chasing avenues and racking my brain to try and come a solution and help council. Like, you know, we're not against each other. We all work together, you know. And we've already taken this to the Shellfish Program Committee, and it's been on the table before a minister, and Minister Dougal Saunders has already acknowledged that statewide there is issues with the oyster industry and sewage spills. Unfortunately, this council's at the top of the ladder with the number of spills and the actions and things and everything. They're also very well reported, so that's positive for council anyway, that they do report well as far as food authority is concerned and things. But from the management of the sewage system or where the sewage health lies of the system, we're at the top of the ladder of being the worst in the oyster industry state. So, and we want to see that change. I've actually lost the sale of my business due to the number of spills over the last couple of years. I had somebody lined up ready to buy the business and I was going to get out. And that's fallen over. They said, I can't operate with that many days. So, you know, it's affecting us so many different levels and flow on industries, you know. I've lost customer confidence, you know, when you're shut for so long. I've had lost customers that have gone to other suppliers because they can get a regular product. That's all got to be built back up. But, you know, that's pretty much irrelevant to you guys to find a fix. We just want to find a fix. We want the issue fixed ASAP. You know, we understand that there's budgets, there's costs and things and everything. That's why we've gone before the Shellfish Program to put it before ministers. I've actually written to the Environmental Minister. I've gone through DPI Minister. I've been hitting all the ministers with letters and things and getting replies. So, you know. The frustrating part was we wanted to be in the meetings initially like we were 2-3 years ago. We've actually had the EPA admit they dropped the ball 2-3 years ago. And we've been hammering the EPA that they dropped the ball. So that's why the EPA are on top of their game this time. And we wanted to be in the initial meetings again this time, and through other government bodies, they didn't want the industry at the meeting, which was frustrating to us. I know it wasn't council's point of view for us not to be at the meeting, but the government agencies didn't want us there at the meeting initially. Apparently now councils feel stronger that they want us there at the meeting because what we've come up with the ideas, the bladders, the licensing, you know, totally removed the STP out of the river through the wetlands. Those sorts of things just need to be thrown around and find a solution. We just need a solution. We've got our backs to the wall. You know, some of the other oyster farmers have invested hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars over the last few years, and they're at a rope's end. I'm lucky enough, I'll survive. I do have another income from another business, but it's hurting bad.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. I think...
Thank you.
If there are no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you for tonight.
Councillors, you'll note that there's a recommendation there which does include an increase in council's allocation for water testing.
Move that.
Moved Councillor Angel. Seconded Councillor Wilson. It's open for discussion. Councillor Genvey.
Well, I've got some questions about this. I'd really like some more information on the grants that we're applying for. It says we're a grant for a sort of a technical response through SCADA as to what was happening, and also a grant around doing something with the stormwater. Like, there seem to be three approaches, one with New South Wales Public Works investigating, you know, upgrades and our alignments of our infrastructure. I'd like to know more about the grants that we have applied for. Like, have we done consultants' reports around what we can do with removing stormwater from our sewage system? I'd like to know that. And I'd like to know how much stormwater ingress, what percentage of stormwater have we found through the testing that we've done in our own infrastructure, as to whether that looks like it's the problem. Because, I mean, Mr. Ford is right, this is a really immediate problem for sustainability, and just more needs to be done. And it's. I mean, the oyster farmers are iconic, but it is tourism, it is farming, it is branding for the Shire. There's a lot of wider connotations around this. So what we do about the stormwater, I think, is more than just a $10,000 contribution to the shellfish testing program, but I note that that's a good start. So
that was a specific request that Mr. Yep. Ford made at his last address as to whether council could try to add some more funding.
Well, I'm trying to, at this point in time, just ascertain how well we're going with looking at our infrastructure and what are we doing with the grants, where are we at with the grants, what are we applying for?
So are you addressing a question to a staff member now?
Yes, I am.
Then you need to do it through the general manager and identify.
Either the general manager or Daniel's role.
The Walsh.
Mr. Walsh's assistant.
His name or his title, either suffice in a council meeting.
Mr. Walsh, please, if you could answer some of those questions.
Through the general manager, Councillor Genvey, we have, I couldn't tell you the exact grant name, but we have got grant funding. We are seeking for the storage tanks at certain locations, mainly Kings Point, the low areas of Maxwell. So that'll assist overflows from pump stations, enable them to keep up. In terms of percentage of flows, I couldn't tell you that. What we do know, while we think it's increased stormwater infiltration, is during those events, the SCADA systems that we've got detect that dramatic increase in flows during those events. So that's what points towards the stormwater infiltration. So the way to restrict that, obviously, is putting the tanks to to capture those overflows, but also do that compliance work through the, well, we started with smoke testing, but the dye testing to catch the offenders out and get those rectified.
But do we think that is a big problem, or just generally our stormwater is not from connections, but just during a major rain event entering our sewage and making it...
Yeah, it's during those events when the majority of the flows, there are a few overflows that occur through blockages. The most recent one was at Beer Creek not that long ago. That was through a blockage and came up through a manhole. So those ones are hard to predict and do occur time to time, but the general pattern that we're getting of the main spills during those high flow stormwater flows through the system.
And this is a question for the general manager around the way we employ people. So the problem with East Street was, and I'm presuming it was just clearing drains, so it's not a high level technical type of engineering going on, but it was done by a contractor and the contractor didn't report the problem. I mean, could we be employing our own staff who would have job descriptions that if something occurred they could they could report as part of their job description, so we'd avoid some of those delays and mistakes that we're getting with contractors?
Yes, certainly, Councillor, that's one option for us, but we try and identify these problems as soon as they occur, whether it's stormwater or sewage infrastructure, and get the right people on the job, whether that's staff or contractors, is a call that I leave up to engineering services to do. In terms of some of the other issues that you raised, so Mr. Ford referenced it in his speech that... we've been working the last 3 months with state government agencies, including the EPA, DPI Water, and Department of Public Works on a pollution reduction program, and that's progressing really well. We're seeking additional funding and expertise from those guys to upgrade our systems. We've commenced dye testing as well this week. So there is a lot of work. Our frustration is that we're not able to have the oyster farmers at the table as well. And this is an issue I continue to raise with EPA, who are actually bringing the agencies together and doing this. So there's a lot of work going on in the space, and hopefully we will have a firm course of action early in the new year as a result of this. So
you think rather than diverting the stormwater then that it's about our connections and our infrastructure?
I think there won't be one magic bullet that'll solve whole issue.
I don't think Councillor Janvey understands what's actually happening with the stormwater. She keeps referring to diverting the stormwater, or is it our infrastructure?
To me, there's the connections and maybe there's old pipes and there's infiltration that way, or whether in rain events it's just too much rain coming down and the way it's being collected just needs to be diverted into something mechanical and basic.
It's not our general... We have a stormwater drainage system. It's not our stormwater drainage system somehow magically ending up in the sewer pipes or... It's potentially... What we know is that in a high rainfall event, our SCADA system tells us that an enormous amount of water is also running through our sewer pump stations. That's where our SCADA equipment picks it up. So it means one of two things. Either water is getting in from saturated ground into the actual pipes, and when the ground is, the science of it is when the ground is wet and the pressure's greater, it will push water in wherever there's a crack or a broken pipe. The other possibility that it is stormwater, but it's off someone's roof who've run the pipes that should be into the council stormwater drainage system, they've run it into the sewer line in their backyard so that their backyard doesn't get soggy or to solve their drainage problem from water off their roof. So what we've got is extra water. In other words, it has to be water in a high rainfall event getting into the pipes, because there's no way in the world that local residents magically for some reason start flushing the toilet 1,000 times more. Well, it's clear the amount of water in the sewerage pipes significantly increases during wet weather events. So that tells us that water in a wet weather event is getting into the pipes running to the sewage treatment plant. So there's a whole range of ways it could be getting there, but it's not the general council stormwater system somehow magically getting into.
The report says up the front there the volume is getting into the Maxwell system is larger than the design. That's the peak wet weather.
Because that
flow.
Volume shouldn't be getting into the system. That's the whole.
It's not
that's
doing
the
same
point.
Damage down in Nambucca as what it's doing to
but
the.
It just
oysters.
Depends. It just depends on a, you know, whether you've got a truckload of illegal connections in Nambucca or whether you've got a lot of broken pipes or cracked pipes or issues like that. And that's, and I think that's Mr. Ford's point. Trying to track all of that down underground, and it's going to take time and expense. There's an immediate problem. And that was why in that previous meeting, and I know that the oyster farmers who were present at the time were supportive of using the wetland or even council creating a turkey's nest. That buys time. It stops that water going into the river virtually immediately.
It seems from our recommendation we're just going ahead with working away at, I mean, we've got applying for those two grants, but there's not much change.
Well, you resolved only to
what we're doing.
You resolved, Councillor Jenby, you were present at the meeting only a couple of months ago, that we're completely redoing our IWCM. And you've been on council long enough to know that that includes a complete review of our sewage infrastructure, not only the work that's to be done now, but what work needs doing, which is why I was asking our gentleman from the Auditor General's Department, because I was concerned when I saw the asset renewal ratio for sewer. I think that needs to be increased. That's my personal view, and that's a decision later based on advice. But that's exactly what that IWCM review is about.
Yep, but it's...
But we need to do that. We need to do that IWCM review and then use that, first of all, to increase fees and charges and developer contributions, as I suspect, if it's warranted, and I suspect it will be. That was why I also asked, because the IWCM will have a long-range plan, but if we struggle to increase rates and charges or contributions because our community's going to struggle to pay it, one of the other options is borrowing the money and then repaying the loans out of future contributions, which is why I was asking those questions about when is it wise to bring forward doing the capital works, even if you've got to borrow the money, but if it solves the problem for the oyster growers and gets that infrastructure up to scratch, then it may well be worth this council considering it. But that's, you know, it's not... What we're doing with sewer is not just about these two recommendations. You had a whole report last year on the IWCM asset management plans for sewer.
Concerned about the immediacy of the sustainability of the oyster industry on the Nambucca River.
That's my point. All of those things you've already resolved to do are a huge part of addressing this. This is only two small components. It's not... This is not... You said all we seem to be doing is this. That's not the case.
I was trying to work out what percentage, with the smoking and that area that we went down with public works, how effective that was. I was trying to get an idea of whether we were getting to the core of the problem or whether through these other grants we need to be in another area.
Well, again, so I think, and as Mr. Ford pointed out, the smoke testing that we did didn't show very many illegal connections, but they will only show illegal connections if someone's just connected illegally. If they, I mean, I'm inclined to say people who are sort of people who would go to that trouble are probably also are cunning enough to go to the trouble to do that to begin with. They're probably also the sort of people who have the smarts to put in that little gizmo. And because it's like a water trap, smoke testing won't find it. So just because the smoke testing we've done didn't show illegal connections, in my view, doesn't guarantee us that we haven't got a lot of illegal connections, which is why, as I said earlier, I'm pleased to see that in this report Mr. Spain has finally said he's giving up on the smoke testing and he's going to use the dye. So So yeah, it may show that we still have a large issue and a lot of water coming from illegal connections on people's roofs, because when it rains, that's why our pump stations are showing this massive increase of water, because everything off their roof is going into the sewer line. We don't know that for sure, and that was why initially the response was do something immediate and hold the water and protect the river and the oysters while we go through the process of, like, if we illegal connections are probably, we can deal with them relatively quickly when we identify them, but if we've got a lot of cracked pipes and things like that, that's going to take time and money to fix them. And that was why at the time the council's view was look at an immediate response to holding the water, whether it be bladders or... And the grant that Mr Thompson just referred to, that the general manager just referred to, Mr Ford came in a few weeks ago and spoke to the general manager and I about the bladder concept. Mr Spain indicated that we already have on a couple of sites, they're underground tanks on council-owned land, and that's what they've lodged that application for, based on Mr Ford's suggestion, is for more. They're not a solution everywhere, because you have to have ground to be able to dig up and put these big underground, but that's what they are, basically an underground storage tank that will hold that overflow. So that's what the grant application is at the moment, is for, there are a few locations that are suitable where we have the ground, and that's what we've applied for. But my point is that in response to your comment that, you know, this is all we're doing.
No, you're picking on one particular point.
Oh, I was just responding to what... Sorry, I was just responding to what you said.
The grants were for, and it's good that you know, but I didn't know. Now I do know that that one of the grants is to investigate this underground system of storage. So, you know, a bit more information would have been good for, you know, knowledge and transparency.
If I could make a comment, I mean, the contrast between Nambucca and Maxwell, I think, is really key here. I mean, Nambucca's lumpy, Maxwell's flat.
Yes.
And what we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years is this incredible weather pattern that seems to have settled over us basically since we had the drought and the bushfires. But this is going to continue on. This is going to continue on. I mean, Maxwell is going to be faced with these challenges, either, you know, drought or flooding rain, on and on. I think it's really important that we do everything we can, not just for the oyster growers, but for the health of the river, for the tourism, for the, you know, the whole kit and caboodle, because I really worry about Maxwell. You know, I look at some of the other towns around, like Lismore and that, and it's just a matter of time before Maxwell's going to get absolutely smashed. And I think we should really be starting to think about how we can alleviate some of that before it happens. I know it's not quite on topic, but I think it's in that matrix.
In the longer term,
we are facing changing rain weather patterns, and we're going to have to deal with it. But anyway, I just thought.
Well, I think I pointed out at a previous meeting that Maxwell was built on the floodplain when the river was our main form of transport, and then we came along in the late 1960s, I think it was. And where the night soil carts used to service all of those properties, we put sewer in. If you were following all of the undercurrent legislation, there is no way you could build Maxwell in its current location. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. If you lodged a development, if you were a developer and this was Maxwell was a greenfield site and you came to Mr. Walsh and said, I want to build a big subdivision and put in a CBD... I think I know what his answer would be, because it would just be prohibited. The issue we have is we have an existing town in a location that, and based on climate change predictions, Councillor Jones is correct, you know, that the likelihood of more extreme wet weather, dry weather and wet weather events, so big, I mean, we're all hearing now that the 1 in 20 year flood is now the 1 in 5 year flood, the 1 in 100 should be considered 1 in 20 years, so... But, you know, short of lifting Maxwell up and completely relocating it, this council's never going to afford to be able to buy every low-lying property in Maxwell out.
Do note, though, the state and federal government threw $700 million at the Northern Rivers.
I think over a long period of time we are going to see a gradual retreat to higher ground.
Yeah, but we've started lifting houses, and we were unanimous in our support of that around this table.
Yes,
And I think that was a great move. But I think we should, you know,
well, not only that,
pursue that further.
We have 45 homes that go under. I think it's in the 1 in 5 year flood, and we have 300 and something that go under in the 358 that go under in the 1 in 100 year flood. That their floor level goes under, and we know that before we even start. So that house raising program, we had 27 applications, and we were given a very short window. We had our applications in on time. That was back in about April. They said it was going to be announced in October, and then it was... Those people are still waiting for an answer. All of those... And there was, you'll recall, it required a significant financial contribution from the homeowner to raise... These are homes that are in... not in high hazard floodways, but are homes that their floor level gets inundated. And part of the condition was you can't just lift it a bit, you had to lift it well beyond, well beyond the 1 in 100 year, you know, the state government wasn't going to assist funding for someone to raise it, you know, 6 inches so that in a 1 in 5 year flood it might not flood. They had to get it right above the 1 in 100. But in the longer term, you know, basically what we have to do is stop illegal infiltration of water. We have to determine where else water is getting in. And that's going to take time. Maybe, you know, when we've got the IWCM coming up, I think it's a good opportunity to actually, it will go on public exhibition, but perhaps before we get to that point, it might be worth our consultants who prepare it, opportunity for the oyster growers to actually speak to the consultants is a useful exercise, so that perhaps a bit of emphasis might be put on an immediate solution of holding the water until that buys us time and protects the oysters until such time as we can correct, not just correct, we've got to find and then correct all of the other problems. And that's not going to happen. I don't believe that will happen in a short time frame, which is why my personal view is that we need to take some immediate steps to deal with that overflow first.
Mayor, could I ask through you, the IWCM, seeing how you brought it up a couple of times, could I ask Mr. Walsh, is it possible to change from a model where council basically has the best case guess, if it gets it wrong, the ratepayers carry the burden, to a user pays system, full user pays, where if there's a new subdivision, all the infrastructure costs at the end of the day are paid by the developer, not up front by the council? Can that model be changed around within the legislation, do you think?
That is the legislation.
Yes. Well, why did we have that $3 million overrun in South Maxwell?
The reason we had that was because the IWCM at the time would have been based on current costs and so forth. And,
right.
Well, what in now, South Maxwell was because of the ability to stage, and my understanding is, and Mr. Walsh will correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure, that the developer got their consent for a stage development, then took 20 years to build it.
So the costs they were paying as they went along, but the sewage system...
If the developer gets in and pays their contribution, we can only charge them the contribution that's applicable at that point in time. But if the development doesn't occur...
The pumping station didn't go in until recently.
The initial pumping station went in.
Yeah, well, so what
You're thinking North Maxwell.
North Maxwell, am I? Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were talking South Maxwell.
Well, I'm talking about the cost overrun that we've just gone through in the last couple of months with the...
When you said South Maxwell, I know we had...
Okay.
We had stage developments. I think there's about 7 development applications that were actually approved back in the early 2000s, and then the developer has taken forever to complete them, but because they had substantial commencement through staging...
Okay.
You can't retrospectively jack up, especially if they don't pay the contribution.
Yep.
If they come into the counter today, even if their consent's 20 years old, my understanding is they pay the current contribution.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're a clever developer and you know that we're reviewing the IWCM, you run in and you pay your contribution in case it increases.
With that understanding, can I ask, is it possible that we don't do that, but we say, well, until all the bills are in, you carry the risk?
Then
that's one through the general manager,
if I could, to Mr. Walsh. Can we change that model around so that we say the developers, you're reaping all the gain here, you take all the risk? Because what we've seen happening is massive cost overruns, inflation. You know, we're not blaming anyone. I think it's been the industry-wide has been caught here. But what I'm saying, can we as a council change the model that says, if you want to have a development, that's fine, the infrastructure costs, you bear them, and when it's all in, you pay the bill. Is that possible? Rather than having this ICM where we're putting out a quote, if you like, and then carrying the can if we miss that quote.
Yeah, through the general manager, Councillor Jones, to a degree, that's essentially what it is. They'll put in all the infrastructure and pay for it as part of their development. The contributions are payable to upgrade that infrastructure in terms of maintenance, downstream pump stations. For instance, South Maxwell's got their own, but there's downstream ones to get it to the treatment plant. Contributions, there's a range of issues. So obviously there's consents that set it at certain rates, historical consents, previous positions to grandfather contributions to encourage development, so that some were at particular rates. The current setup is you'll pay contributions in accordance with the relevant contribution plan and IWCM of the time, but you can't go back. So if there are errors in that IWCM, if anything's underestimated, not captured, then that's missed and gets... So there's a bit of that in the current...
I suppose that's the very nub of the point, isn't it? You know, if you go and get your car fixed, you know, for a clutch or something, they'll say it's roughly around here. If it's $500 more, you've got to pay the whole lot, you know. Okay, thank you. I mean, I think that's something we can revisit during that process.
And I think it needs to be made clear we're required to have an IWCM. It's part of integrated planning and reporting, so... But all of those things that you've discussed should fit in under that. The key is, you're right, to have it as accurate as possible. But I also need to remind councillors that we have some of the highest water and sewer developer contributions in New South Wales because we have a low rate base, but we have three towns. And I think in most locations, water and sewer contribution for a new home is around 22,000 combined.
28, under 20.
Just under 20. Some of them are 28. Depends on the location, I think, which catchment. But they're significant, and of course, then we get crueled, or you know, we are criticised because of the affordability of housing. And we all know that if the developer's got to pay 20,000 or 28,000 for a water and sewerage contribution, we know who's going to end up actually paying for that. That just goes on to the price of the block of land. So it's hard, but, you know, we need to be accurate. And the whole point is, whether we like it or not, and we know it's expensive, but we have to ensure that we've got quality, adequate water and sewer infrastructure, because if you haven't, this is what you get, sewer spills.
Question through the General Manager to Mr. Walsh. This stormwater certificate, is it possible for us to have that?
Through the
and also, if people are found with a connection to the stormwater, to the sewerage from the stormwater, can we find them?
Through the General Manager, Council Events, we can find them. It's a breach of the Local Government Act. You need an approval to connect into council sewer, water, or stormwater infrastructure, and if it's an illegal connection, you can get a fine and an order to rectify, which is the process we would go down. I've forgotten the first question.
Stormwater certificate.
Oh, stormwater certificate. It's not something council as we could implement. It'd have to be a state legislative move, similar to the pools.
Following on from Councillor Vance's question, is that something that as a council we should be asking the state to consider legislating, that it is required?
Madam Mayor, it is something, it would definitely assist. I think the most important thing is a compliance process. Obviously, people can build a house and live in it for years, so definitely having a system where, similar to pools, you've got to get a certificate can help, but it's getting it up front. They should work hand in hand, but the primary thing is getting it up front.
So is the process giving a warning and then a fine if they don't comply? Or can we just say no warnings, fine?
We've got the option of no warning and fine.
I think that's what we should do. If we've got a problem, no warnings and fine.
Yeah. Can I, through the general manager, our usual approach with compliance is to get people to react, which is generally with a warning to say get it done with a set period of time, otherwise we shall fine. You generally come across issues where people don't have a lot of funds to their name.
But if you know you've got an illegal connection, so you don't get a fine.
Well, that's it. But a lot of people buy their property not having any idea. They just see the water go and unsure. So obviously, if you know it's a deliberate act, yeah, you could look at doing that. But in a lot of cases,
yeah,
it's unknown to them.
Can I ask the General Manager a question then? Should we be considering doing a media release advising that Council will be dye testing and, like, giving forewarning and saying there are significant fines and orders that... In other words, A, stopping anyone else who's thinking about doing the same thing from doing it, and giving people a chance to fix it before we turn up and hit them with a fine. Should we be on the front foot, or would you prefer not to give warning?
People will react. They'll fix it.
Sorry. Madam Chair, with the dye testing, we sent letters out to all the residents in a particular catchment saying we're going to be undertaking dye testing. Don't we have to do a media release?
Let people know anyway beforehand, yep. So there's no issue with a media release, you know, alerting people to the fact that we're coming. Maybe just a general one, sure. Right across the Shire.
Yep. We can put a dot point in the recommendation.
Would the mover and seconder be happy to add that as a dot point, that council do a media release regarding dye testing or illegal... targeting illegal stormwater connections. I have a suspicion that there are people who think they can just dig up the backyard, install one of these, and no one will ever know. But, you know, if they're thinking about doing that, or they've just done that, okay, and they read in the paper that they're coming to dye test, they might either change their mind or dig it up and fix it.
It's not an expensive fix.
Next
full moon, Madam Mayor, I can see them out now digging up.
But isn't that what we want them to do?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if it works.
Angel, you happy with that?
Yeah.
Councillor Wilson, you happy to add that?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, mover and seconder have accepted.
And possible fines. And fines. Not possible fines, just put fines.
Fines apply. Got it, Councillor. Yep.
Please tell me, though, it's not a $110 fine if you're caught.
Madam Mayor, I couldn't tell you what the exact number is, but it's in the hundreds.
Okay. Well, it's just that I know a lot of these fines are actually also covered by regulation or legislation, and a lot of them, you know, the fines are minimal compared to the offence. A lot of people will, if they've got away with something for 20 years, you know, paying a minimal fine is... water off a duck's back.
We increase it.
So we can continue to fine them over and over until it's rectified.
That's correct.
That's not so bad then. Councillor Angel.
Madam Mayor, through the General Manager, Mr Walsh, the grant funding we're chasing for the bladders, the control mechanisms to control these overflows, is that something, if we are successful, does that mean the mandatory 21 days, the EPA, is it 21 days when there's a leak? Does that get culled? Yeah, so these guys can keep, or it's...
Through the General Manager, Councillors, no. If there was still a leak, if it was to work and stop all overflows because of stormwater, you're still going to potentially get overflows from blockages and whatnot. And if it does enter it, then yes, there would be the EPA's 21-day shutdown. Yeah.
Mandatory. No other discussion or questions? Okay, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Okay. Now my iPad's turned itself off, but we go back to, I believe, item 9.1, page 19. It had a full battery before it. No, it's all right. Shutting down on me. Councillors, sorry about that. I finally got my iPad working again. So do we have a mover for item 9.1, the Outstanding Actions Report?
Move it.
Moved Councillor Angel. Seconded Councillor Vance.
Sorry, Madam Mayor, just in relation to item 2 there, you'll note that there is a further update that hasn't been put in yet. So Teams meeting is organised for tomorrow morning with the relevant staff.
It's in relation to item 2. Any other discussion or questions? Councillor Vance.
In regards to item 2, with this handover for the highway, the current maintenance schedules that they've got going on with the roads, it's not up to scratch. I don't think the local community would be happy to have the roads. You know, you can't even see the guardrails. If they do the handover and they go with the current budget when they're not spending any money, they might think that that's feasible for us to take over. But if it's our roads, our residents aren't going to be happy. So can we ask them to do a proper schedule, keep the roads clean and tidy, and then go off that budget rather than what they're going off now?
We actually, some years ago, and it would have been before Mr. Walsh's involvement and before our new general manager, this council spent $80,000 employing independent consultant expert engineers who put together exactly what you're talking about based on what was then RMS's own maintenance records and costings and history, so that we were trying to ensure that two things. First of all, that they maintain, because as you're aware, they still own Ginnegay Way. A lot of residents now think it's a council road. It's not. It's still a state responsibility, and so are the dreadful roundabouts that are so poorly maintained and a horrible opening entrance to visitors coming into the Shire. The other aspect was, as part of the handover package, we wanted suitable funding for those sections that were to be handed to us to financially compensate that maintenance based on their own records. And that's where we came up with the $180-odd million worth of assets, because that's their own asset listing. But
it's going to be a problem because it's...
Well, we had agreement from virtually everyone that they were, the staff were dealing with RMS, and all of a sudden they created this regional road review panel, and the state government announced that they were going to take, I think it was 15,000 kilometres of local roads back into state control. We obviously wanted them to keep the old highway. We weren't so worried about some of it. We've got regional roads as well that we have to fund a significant part of, but certainly those, the highway, we, and that was the original plan, that the RMS were going to keep virtually all but of the old Pacific Highway as a state road, including all of the bridges. But we would have to fund all of the service roads, you know, the new roads that have been created to connect now that the connections to the highway have been limited. That was sort of the deal that we struck. We were happy with that. Then they created this regional review panel, a bunch of experts, and that's been going on now for something like 2 years. and still no responses and no answer. What we have listed in our financial statements a contingent liability of that highway being handed over for our ratepayers to fund. Actually, if I can find them, they'll be old figures now, but seeing as we have some new councillors, I think I still have all of the figures from back then. It gives you a breakdown. Like, at the time, based on RMS's maintenance cost, the maintenance cost of that section of highway equated to 50% of our annual rate income. It was just to maintain that old highway. So it'll give you some idea of how... Do you want to talk about that, then? Did you want to read that out? Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So just draw your attention, councillors, to the annual financial statements on page 71. Under contingencies, the Section Assets Not Recognised, Land Under Roads, Section 3, Handover of Former Pacific Highway, Ginnegay Way. I'll draw your attention to the second paragraph. It says, based on asset data provided by the RMS, the asset transfer value for council comprised 24 bridges valued at $52 million and 32 kilometres of road valued at $182 million. These assets generate a depreciation expense of approximately $3 million per annum.
And given that I think our total rate income in the 2021 financial year was, from memory, about $11.4 million, you can sort of see what sort of a liability that is potentially being thrust onto us. But anyway, we'll wait with bated breath as to... There is an election coming up, but my suspicion is we'll get told, oh, we'll sort it all out when the findings of the review panel come back, and they won't come back until after the election. I think I had a couple of items noted on this one. One of the things that I wanted to flag or question is the item about Farringdon Fields and the work that we've done with the local Goombangia community to try to protect Area A. Oh, sorry.
I'd go for it, but I was going to say something about number one.
Given that the federal government have said they've got no intention of lifting the order on Farringdon Fields, the whole agreement that was reached between Forestry Council, the Goombangia elders, and even the developer that owns Area A. Area A, we were told, is the significant area. That's the area they want to protect, not so much Farringdon Fields. But the whole proposal was based on lifting the protection order on Farringdon Fields and buying Area A and protecting it in perpetuity. And the elders at the time were quite happy to have it held in trust by council until there was appropriate consultation with the broader Aboriginal community as to where the what entity or organisation were the most appropriate owners. So there was no excuse for delays with the government. You know, the Aboriginal community had indicated that they were happy for it to be legally, you know, obviously it'd be sewn up in legal documents, held in trust by council, and then there is a process they have to go through of consulting all of the land councils, different families, and so forth, and eventually it would be handed over to Goombangia or to local Aboriginal ownership. The problem now is that we have this advice that the feds aren't going to lift, have no intention, was the wording, of lifting the order. So what happens if we go ahead, get the area protected? It still leaves the council and all those homes with the fire asset protection zone problems of Farringdon Fields. The council in the past has indicated they don't necessarily, they're not looking at Farringdon Fields as a sporting field, and we don't necessarily need all of it, but we do, well, we don't, but the residents in all of those homes that have been built in that area have always relied on the asset protection zone that the Moan Farringdon Fields provided. Now, under that order, we can't just go on to Farringdon Fields and keep it Moan. Neither can anyone else. But the catch here is the possibility that we end up Farringdon Fields still with a protection order, even if we're successful in getting Area A. So I just wanted to flag that, perhaps more so to staff dealing with this. The agreement was that it was one for the other. In return for the government and council supporting the purchase of Area A, and forestry also were 100% in support, because some of Area A belongs to State Forests. They've agreed to basically hand it over without, well, at their discussions. In their case, it was without compensation, but obviously the developer that owns the balance of Area A, he wants compensation.
Can he do anything with it?
Sorry, with?
Can the developer do anything with Area A?
Yes.
What?
Develop it into housing.
There's
part of it that I think he'd struggle, but yeah, there's other areas that could be developed into housing. There is a section of it that I think he had to withdraw when his previous DA went before a JRPP because of cultural significance. Yeah, it has some value. We can't just say, well, bad luck. And there's no way of, you know, of making him he's not going to donate it. Bought the land. Bought it as land zoned for development, I believe. So, but the federal government are looking at, there are some potential sources. There's a couple of bodies that actually do this. That's their role, is to purchase land that is of significant cultural value, but it's quite a long process, and until that happens. All right. Councillor Buchanan.
Yes, so on number one, I have gone to Bucker Land Council, mm-hmm. And I believe it's Mr. Walsh. Should receive an email soon from the CEO regarding who will represent the Land Council in the discussions. Look forward to that. And then I've got number four. I remember I received an email from Mr. Walsh. It might have been Mr. Sykes in the last couple of days regarding number four and the decision. Was it you? Yeah, sorry, Mr. Sykes. Regarding the nominations to the Gargawangan board, and I think about 10 minutes ago I got a reply saying that that will be now on the 21st of this month. So it'll be put to the minister on the 21st. There's an update for you.
Oh, well, thank you for the update, and some correspondence and communication from the Land Council will be excellent news. I think we'll be able to move some of these issues forward to everybody's benefit. Also wanted to question number nine. Is DA, where is it? It's on page 28. It sort of relates, there's two items that relate to this. This is in relation to both the widening of Coronation Road at Barrowville and the section of land that the hub need to put the electricity underground, the electricity, the power. Is this going to create a problem? The timeframes that are involved, is this going to create a problem for the hub? Because obviously they can't operate the hub and their brand new building without electricity. So what impact are these couple of issues relating to the land claim, Crown land and so forth, what impact are they going to have on completion of the hub, given that that's grant funding and there's deadlines on the funding?
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, item 9's more about the registration of the lot for the hub.
Mm-hmm.
That won't impact the electricity provision to the land.
Okay.
Really, it's number 10, which relates to the implementation of the safety measures on...
Sorry, if I could just... What confused me there then was that on that one, it actually says, awaiting concurrence from New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council to enable licence application to be lodged. So there's two separate issues with New South Wales Land Council. One's relating to Crown land and the other's...
Sorry, Madam, to clarify, we've kept the original commentary regarding the concurrence issue in 9, but uh-huh. That item's just about the registration of that plan for the hub. I'm unfamiliar whether that registrate where they can't. I assume they can still operate if it's on our land and the plan has been registered. Their main issue that they've flagged with us is about the provision of services,
yeah.
Which is where I'm really going to in item 10. So mm-hmm. what they're looking to do is put electricity, telecommunications, and we're looking to put the safety measures on Coronation Street for the existing preschool. None of those works can happen within... There's a wedge of land, Crown land, that covers Coronation Street. The local Aboriginal Land Council have given a partial withdrawal of the land claim for that section. We've since received a non-objection from the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council for that section to enable the works to occur. We're now just waiting on the licence to come through from Crown Lands for the works to proceed. We've followed up. Haven't got a response yet.
So until that licence is received from Crown Lands, so the local land council have been good, the state have assorted, the problem now is Crown Lands licence.
Just waiting on the Crown Lands licence, yep. Well, as soon as we get that licence, then the hub's works can occur and we council can go in and do those safety measures.
Given the surf club's been waiting on their licence for the last 6 years.
The Crown are aware of the urgency of the matter, Madam Mayor.
I hope so. Okay, so once that licence is achieved, then construction can go ahead. Is there a plan B if it goes pear-shaped, as in can they go around and lay the services somewhere else without... needing that licence?
Yeah, Madam Mayor, there is plan B. They can go around, but it takes far too long to get the design done and certified to do that, and there's additional cost involved to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet it's more expensive. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Councillor Buchanan.
I was going to make a comment on that one and say that I had gone out of my way to go to the Barrowville Land Council and have discussions with the current and previous CEO around how this is all going to work, and I've actually gotten a hard copy of their email to Mr. Walsh from them, including the map of the section that they've taken off of their land claim, and their assurance of their agreement to go ahead with this and state's agreement. So, I was going to say I'm pretty sure it's kind of in our hands now to pass it on to the next
same page. Good. And by the sound of it, Mr. Walsh has had confirmation as a result of that, so thank you very much. Okay. I also had a question about number 16, and if I may, I just wanted to ask the General Manager, what was Bellingen Shire Council's response regarding joining us in an approach to Coffs and Port Macquarie? Were they...
I'll have to take that on notice, Madam Chair. I spoke to Simon about it. No, our meeting is coming up very shortly with the other two.
Green waste.
Yeah, there's the meeting, the regional waste reference group's strategy meeting's coming up, but the resolution was that that we approach Bellingen Council, I think, I forget how it was worded, and ascertain their interest in partnering with us to talk to both Coffs Harbour and Port Macquarie because they both have facilities for green and yellow bin. So we haven't approached them.
So we were hoping to raise that at the meeting, both Bellingen and Coffs Harbour.
Okay, but wouldn't we just check with Bellingen first that they were happy to share the approach? Sorry, that was my expectation in moving it, that we would talk to Bellingen and see what their interest was in joining with us and trying to potentially negotiate or find out what possibilities there were post-2027 with being part of any arrangement Coffs Harbour might make, but also having a look at the same possibility to the south of us because Port Macquarie Hastings runs a similar... Because, as I recall stating at the time, the financial cost of us, the capital required to set up and run our own yellow bin and FOGO recycling is beyond a small council. It's something that has to be done on a regional level. We have two major regional councils who already do that and already have those processing sites set up. So Coffs Harbour is under contract, whereas I'm pretty sure Port Macquarie Hastings actually own theirs and then it's, you know, staffed or run under contract. But we need to be looking now, and that was the recommend, or the resolution was, that instead of just us going off on our own and talking to them, Bellingen are going to be in the same position, and it was to ascertain, first of all, their interest in partnering with us. I know that we've got the meeting coming up, but that's only going to involve us, Bellingen and Coffs. So we haven't approached Port Macquarie Hastings yet.
Not yet, no.
Okay. Well, we also need to ascertain whether Bellingen are interested in being part of that approach to Port Macquarie. I just don't want to have staff start discussing it at a lower level and offend Bellingen because we haven't formally approached them about our resolution.
Gotcha.
Okay. Councillor Jenby.
That item, Madam Mayor. Could we be informed if that, with the meeting with Coffs, Bellingen and Nambucca, if Coffs brings up burning waste up in Casino?
They usually, the meetings are minuted, so I'd be more than happy to, I know I've been sent a copy in the past and I've sent them into records, I'd be more than happy to distribute the minutes to all councillors once we get them.
That'd be good, because I know the position of some people in Casino is if you don't like burning waste in Sydney, why would we like burning it in Casino? So it'd just be interested to see if Coffs Harbour is thinking of pursuing...
Well, if you've got nothing better to do, read their business paper for their last council meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that what they think?
Part of it's enclosed, but there's a significant report on... They've had SMEC do a business case and proposal for them that was presented to their council enclosed, but there is a report in their open meeting and some interesting... resolutions which were a bit different to the recommendations. So that'll give you an overview or some idea of their future approach, but yes, a part of that is waste to energy and
Thank you.
Hey, if there's no other discussion on this item, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 19? No, that's what we just did. Sorry, page 36, item
10.1. 10.1.
I'll move.
Oh, sorry. Moved Councillor Buchanan, seconded Councillor Wilson. Is there any discussion? It's probably a bit of a, not so much a typo, but the one part that people are probably going to read is the introduction. There's one very long sentence. On the revenue side, we've been hamstrung by the decision of IPART to instruct a 0.7% rate cap. This means all council. I think that needs either a full stop, and then this means all councils in New South Wales will reflect, or it needs the word that inserting in there. Was it?
Yep, we'll get that fixed.
So no other... Yeah, so that doesn't require a... It's just a... grammatical correction, if that's what I'd call it. Okay, those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 38, item 10.2.
Madam Mayor.
Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Wilson this time. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 40, item 10.3. Are you moving that, Councillor Janvey? Moved Councillor Janvey. Seconded Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 45, item 10.5. Moved Councillor Angel. Seconded Councillor Martin Ballingarry. Any discussion? It's good to see they didn't decide to rate peg it. Well, I think that's where they were.
Yeah,
that's where they were heading. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Mind you, there's going to be a truckload of guidelines on your pricing, which will probably, the fine print will probably have a similar equivalent to rate pegging, I suspect. Anyway, if there's no discussion, those in favour. Against, it's carried. Page 48, item 10.6. Moved Councillor Vance, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 50, item 10.7.
Yes.
Moved Councillor Wilson, seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 51, item 10.8. Moved Councillor Vance, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. There's no late reports. So page 53, item 11.1. Moved Councillor Janvey, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 54, item 12.1. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Thought you might have a comment, Councillor Janvey. It's probably similar to one that I've written on my notes. Go ahead.
I don't know if it's similar. A little hard to work out what the specific concerns were, but I guess it came down to reading it, design, selection, application and risk management. And it seemed to me that, it needed further investigation and the recommendation isn't to proceed with another trial, but if feels like the report is thinking from a pothole point of view and our current situation, when many people in our shire would die for a dust seal. Their houses may have been built 50 years earlier and more people have moved on to dirt roads. And it's a very different story. And it's I'd still like to see another trial in a different situation, but that's probably me. But, you know, like our roads are really a social determinant sort of health, education, opportunity and jobs, and it's really important that they work. And, you know, I know on that Bellingen to Barrowville road, you know, some farmers got together and did an otter seal for dust over a kilometre or something because it was driving them insane. So I still think there are more issues. And okay, maybe then roads aren't made as well as a tar-sealed one or done under different conditions, and we don't know the risk of that in the long term of having more roads with seals on it, but I do think we need to think widely on this.
Okay. That's not quite... I recall the discussion at the time, and I have a feeling it might have been your motion, but the one thing that councillors had discussed and were looking for was a cost comparison between for construction between an otter seal and a traditional road construction, and then an indication of the value of maintenance, amount of money spent on maintenance on an otter seal over a period of time, and what, you know, compared to how often we have to patch potholes or the maintenance costs on a traditional seal. I have to say I was a bit disappointed after waiting 6 months since the resolution to get this report, and there's really no more information than there was in the last report. So I'm going to move an amendment, and it'll be a bit long-winded. I'm sorry for the minute taker. It's the recommendation with a second dot point. Council receive a report on the total cost per kilometre of construction for construction of the otter seal on Congarini Road compared to the cost per kilometre of a similar road constructed using traditional methods around the same time, and a similar comparison of maintenance costs on each over a period of 5 years. Would it be 5 years since the otter seal went down? Maybe not. Sorry.
A similar period of time, time.
Maintenance costs on the otter seal over an equivalent time period. Then, yeah. Sorry, I've mucked up the minute taker now. Instead of over a period of 5 years, over an equivalent time period. So if it's...
For the minute taker, Madam Mayor, on that second line at the end of it, where it's got similar methods, you said traditional methods. You've got similar road constructed using traditional.
Yep. I want a comparison between the cost of building an otter seal compared to traditional road building. Then I want a comparison of maintenance costs. Now, we should have capitalised that road. We should have the figure for what the construction cost was. Any other major reconstruction we've done anywhere on our tar seals where we've done, say, a kilometre of road, we should have the costs on that. That should already be in our system. Shouldn't be too hard to find. And what I understand, when maintenance is done, it goes to job numbers to particular roads. So I'm assuming it's not too hard to look at that job number for that particular road and another road and do a comparison to give us... I just want to know whether one's cheaper to build and how they match up maintenance-wise. You know, the otter seal might be cheaper to construct, but if we're spending a fortune on maintenance because it's not lasting, then, you know... But if the otter seal shows to have been cheaper to construct and cheaper to maintain, then it actually tells us it's a viable alternative. Having said that, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, it might have cost us more.
My memory is, that it was subsidised as a trial.
But even so, they would have quoted an actual value of the job. Even if the people who put it down didn't charge us the full price, they would have told us. I'm quite sure they would have been very keen to tell us how much they were doing us a favour by, especially if they were trying to sell us otter seals in the future. Mm. So, yeah, I don't think that one will wash with them. So if I can get a seconder for the amendment, seconded Councillor Angel. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Those in favour of the amendment? Against? It's carried, it becomes a motion. Is there any further discussion on the Councillor Vance?
Just in regards to sealed roads, if a normal... If a developer does a sealed road, he has to have compaction testing. Mm-hmm. On a main road, they have to do a beam test. Are we doing that with the roads that we construct? Or the contractors, are they required to do the testing as part of the deal? Is that why, you know, you've got to make sure everything's compacted properly, you've got to make sure it's tested, beam tested, so it lasts the time that it's meant to. Are we asking for those tests to be done?
Just for clarification, are you saying where we are reconstructing one of our own roads, are we doing the Bankel and beam test and checking the compaction rates before we put the seal down?
Yeah.
Through the general manager, Councillor Vance, yes, we get geotechnical investigations done before to work out what the pavement design should be. We've got our own staff, whether it be contractors or our own staff doing the works. We've got staff that go out and do inspections like they would for a developer.
But the final
testing, I'd have to take that on notice
The important part of constructing the road is to make sure that it's going to be compacted right so we don't have potholes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Walsh can take that on notice and perhaps just email all councillors so that we'll get a copy of the response, just to give us a rundown of what is done, perhaps, you know, before and after the geotech inspections. Just a layman's plain English version, so we can understand what happened.
If we're getting grants to do the roads, we need to make sure that, you know, that's included in the grant and they're getting done.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Buchanan.
I guess a really quick response to that. In my experience, within civil construction recently, we have had council staff come out and assess the levels of compaction that I've been involved in. This is through the Roads to Home project. So not council. that we have had a few different tests from time to time where we've failed and had to redo compactions and test levels. So I'm pretty sure through my experience that council is at least up to scratch on that one.
I think, though, the question is whether we're applying the same diligence to our own work as we're applying to private contractors, developers and anyone else, which I'm fairly confident that we will be, but...
What I'm saying.
Well, and as Councillor Vance, the reason for his, as he pointed out, the reason for his question is those things actually cost money, and where we're applying for grant funding for road upgrades, we should be ensuring that we're covering any geotech costs. Look, the same applies to any environmental... When we build bridges, one of the biggest... Well, not one of the biggest costs, but before we even start thinking about turning the soil or, you know, building a bridge is doing, what is it, the review of environmental factors by a suitably qualified person, doing all of your environmental controls in the waterway before you start construction. Those things all cost money and should be part of. And geotech work to make sure that your headstocks are going to be stable to hold the bridge, all of that should form part or be added to the cost of the bridge. Okay, if there's no other discussion, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. And there are no other late reports, so could I have a motion to go to closed meeting, please? Moved, Councillor Vance. Seconded, Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. The tape's back on. We're now back in open meeting, so I'll ask the General Manager to read the resolution made in closed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to item 13.1, SF3283, purchase of North Maxville Soccer Fields, Casey Drive and Bellevue Drive, North Maxville, Council resolved that based on the valuation previously obtained from Heron Todd White, that Council advised Transport for New South Wales that it is prepared to make an offer of that price plus 10% and a 15-year community use caveat in accordance with Property New South Wales community use policy.
Thank you. And there being no further business, I'll declare the meeting closed. And thank you all for your courtesy, attendance and patience. Well, that